Pacific, 92.1, take one.
Hi, I'm Carmen Artero Casperbauer. Today is January 27, 1992, Monday. And incidentally, it's also my mom's birthday. God rest her soul.
Carmen, well, we're here to talk a little bit about your involvement during 1941. Could you explain, maybe go back and explain a little bit about the preparation of the Masculine Conception and kind of start from there, what that was about?
On Monday, December 8, 1941, I was dressed in my angel outfit, and of course that's the feast of the Immaculate Conception. So my sister Maria, who is a year older than myself, and I were dressed to go to church. My dad took us there. Mom had to stay home with the other children because she just gave birth to a virgin in October, so she was unable to go to the mass and the procession. Our nanny or maid had helped us gather all the petals and put in our little basket. So we walked over to church, and we were in church, and we started, the novena was started, and we got up and we sang our song of Pau Pau Naninai, and we were, you know, throwing the flowers into the altar. Then after that we sat down, and Bishop Bulano started the mass, and it was toward communion time, I think, when we heard airplanes, drone coming from far away, and they kept coming closer. Everybody started murmuring, and everybody seemed to just stop on their track. I couldn't make what it was. You know, when you're a six-year-old girl, you don't quite understand what was going on. Later on, it became louder, and as it got louder, I got really excited because I thought it was Pan Am Clipper coming to Guam. So I said to the girl next to me, "Pan Am Clipper, Pan Am Clipper." And then my sister Maria, who's always the older to see that I mind my manners, you know, poked me and says, "Famakili patsapmo," you know, "keep your mouth shut." So then it sounded like a whole lot of Pan Am Clippers were coming. And then everybody started getting really, the adults were getting nervous and excited. And Bishop Bulano stopped doing whatever he was doing, and he went up to the pulpit and he said something, but I didn't understand because he's a Spanish priest, and he had a very heavy accent, and also I didn't know what was being said. Later on, the planes left, but we heard explosion someplace, and then after he was done talking, people just stayed, and he led us into some prayers. And then after that, when we didn't hear any more planes approaching, he let us go. Later on, I found out that he was telling the people that he was told that from somebody from the governor's office came to tell him during communion that the Japanese had already bombed Pearl Harbor, and the Japanese planes are going to be coming. And I guess they started from Saipan, and so, you know, they're very close to us. And so he told the people that after the planes would leave, for us to hurry home. So my sister and I were running out, and everybody was screaming and running and acting really crazy. The women took off all their high heels, then they were holding them and running. Then my sister and I couldn't find my dad, and we didn't know which way was home. And so we started crying. We felt lost, and we felt abandoned, and we didn't know where to go. Then later on, my mom's sister, Auntie Anna, found us, so took us by she was all, she looked so comical with her high heels on her hands, and took the two of us and led us, and we started running away. Then later on, another Japanese plane came down, swooping down on us. So we took cover under somebody's house. And in the old days before the war, there were homes that were built in stilts, and then they put wooden fences around it. So we hid in there, and we landed on top of some turtles that were being raised. Then later on, after the plane left, we came back out and she took us home. When we got to our house, I saw that my dad had our big transportation, it's like a jitney, filled with our household goods, and my mom was sitting in the front with holding my sister Virgie, and all my younger brothers and sisters were in there. So I got really angry because I felt like if Auntie Anna hadn't found us and we hadn't gotten there, maybe my dad would have left us. And I felt really devastated by that. But the only thing that I was concerned after that was to run upstairs to the house and get my clown suit, because I was a clown in one of the play at school. So I managed to do that. I escaped from the grasp of my dad and then went and got it, and then got in the jitney. And as we were driving away, people were just all over like crazy, and they were hanging in the front and the back and the sides. And then my dad couldn't drive because everybody was that was sitting on the hood of the car was blocking his view. So he had to go out there and start pulling people and pushing people and hitting people. And that too shocked me, because I never saw my dad do anything like that ever in my life. After the war, he told me that he did not abandon us, that he asked Auntie Anna to take care of us and bring us to the house, because he felt that at that time he had to just run home to help mom and the new baby and all the little ones and get ready. So that, you know, but it was not till after the war when I learned that. So it was very painful to know that you thought your dad left you. So we came up to Tokwak, which is now NCS across the street from here, and we stayed in the RNs. And at times my mom would go to Oganya to get rice, and once in a while I would accompany her. And it's always a scary thing to ride Japanese truck to go to Oganya for that. Yeah, we stayed in our aunt's house. My grandfather and family lived in their aunt's house right in front where the, after the main gate, right now in NCS. That was the officer of the day building that was my grandfather's house. And then further down was our house, our aunt's house. And so we stayed there. Only occasionally, you know, did we go down to Oganya. At one time, my mom was really, really scared, and I remember being with her in that truck to go to Oganya. And people were let to get out of the truck, and you have to bow down to show respect to the guard or whatever. And if you don't do, then you know, you get punished. And I remember one person didn't bow down all the way like he's supposed to. And so he was start being hit with the butt of the rifles and then taken away. And that's all I saw of that. And that was really scary, you know, when you're a little girl. Then we went down to Oganya, and my mom had to stay in line for many, many hours just to get some rice. Later after the war, I learned that on those occasions that my mom had gone several times, she was carrying, one time I think was carrying a letter inside her clothes for Mrs. Johnston from Tweed. And I guess I could imagine why she would be very scared at that one time when we were apprehended because that one guy, you know, didn't bow down like he should, because he was afraid that we will all be searched. And when we went down to Aganya at that time, we were able to stay at our own home in Aganya. But later on, we were not able to do that anymore because the Japanese threw all our household goods and used our house for their headquarters. While we're living in Tokguak, I remember my dad and mom always preparing food for my dad to take into the jungle. And we were always hungry. We were lucky we had, you know, one meal a day. And I was always resentful that my dad and mom were preparing this food to be taken into the jungle, and I had no idea who was it for. Later on, I found out that it was...
We are out of film, yeah. We have to change magazines.
92-2, take two.
I'm sorry, cut. Rolling.
We're in the Pacific, 92-2, take three.
We were talking a little bit about the life on the ranch. Can you explain a little bit of what the ranch looked like? And you also had mentioned that your father was bringing food into the jungle.
Yes. Well, like I said, we were living in the ranch further in than where my grandfather ranches, and for the first, I don't know how many months, or maybe close to a year, we were just, you know, living on our own. And the Japanese were building a lighthouse, I think, toward further by the ocean. And then after a while, I remember our maid was helping my mom with some work that it seems like there's a lot of secretive things going on at the time, and I keep on trying to find out because, you know, they don't tell little kids what's going on, but as a little kid you get curious, you want to know. Then I saw some khakis were being hung out on the line, and I know that my father was the only male in the family, and I didn't know whose trousers those were. And then after that, that's when my father started taking food into the jungle, and I resented it because I was always hungry. And then later on, my father was not taking food every day, but he was taking it every other day. I still was resentful of that.
Really?
We're in the Pacific, 92-2, take four.
I seem to hear the camera more.
Okay, cut.
Sound is rolling.
Camera.
Really?
We're in the Pacific, oral history, Mrs. Casper Bauer, 92-2, take five.
As I was saying earlier, when I saw some khaki trousers hung up on the line, I started wondering whose trousers they were, because my father didn't wear those kind. And then, but I never was able to find out at that time. And my father was taking food into the jungle every day, and I was resentful of that because we never had enough food to eat, and we couldn't eat between meals, and we had very little to eat during meal time. Then later on, my father was not taking the food.
Sound okay. Is rolling.
Okay. Yeah. Sound rolling camera. We're in the Pacific, oral history, Mrs. Casper Bauer, 92-2, take six.
After we left Aganya on that day, December 8th, we came up to Tokguak, And we lived in our aunt's house, which is further in from my grandfather's. And we were living, trying to adjust to rent's life, where, you know, no electricity, no running water, and outhouse, things like that. And we were able to make it fairly decent with, as far as having enough food in the beginning of the war. But eventually, things start to get a little bit harder. And one day, there was some secret confrontation or secret discussion that went on between my mother and father and that outside the house, and I didn't know what it was, and I kept trying to find out. And later on, I saw that our maid was helping do laundry, and I saw some khaki trousers hanging on the line. I know they were not my father's, and nobody else wear trousers in their family, because my father was the only adult male. And I never found out who they belonged to until after the war. Then my father started taking food to the jungle every day, and I was very resentful because I was always hungry and I was very, very skinny. And after a while, my father was not taking food into the jungle every day, but every other day. And then later on, it's twice a week. And then I started helping him. He'll carry one gunny sack, and I will carry a gunny sack, and we will go into the jungle. And later on, he'll take my gunny sack, and he'll give me an empty gunny sack and said, "Here, you gather some Federico while I take this." And I said, "But where are you going with all the food? And why can't we have some?" And then he said, "Oh, it's for the Japanese over the lighthouse," because earlier I told you that the Japanese were building a lighthouse. And so we always had to watch when we're in the jungle and trying to cross a path so that we will not be seen by the Japanese on the lighthouse. Yet I was a little girl, and I didn't connect the two. How come we were bringing the food to the Japanese at the lighthouse? How come that we were hiding and waiting until they're not looking in our direction to come out to the open to cross the path? And all this thing came later on after the war. One time when I was helping my father bring food into the jungle, and it was around December, and he told me to gather Federico while he went up, I guess, to give to eat the food. And he was gone for a long, long time. It was a very long time for me, you know, as a child, that was very long. And I got hungrier and hungrier, and I got all the two gunny sacks full of Federico nuts, and he still wasn't coming. Then I started thinking that maybe he was treating me like the story of Hansel and Gretel. Maybe I was eating too much food at home, and it's his way of getting rid of me, because he couldn't have, you know, he doesn't have enough food to feed everybody at home. But I still didn't understand why, if there's not enough food for us kids and mama and himself at home, why he would take food to the jungle. So I really started crying very, very hard, you know, calling for him, "Papa, Papa, where are you? I promise I won't eat much food at home anymore. Just take me back home, please." And that was very real for me. And then later on he came, and he just said that he was sorry he was detained. And then he said something about wild pigs and wild boars that detained him. So he carried the Federico. We put the Federico sack on two sticks and put it on our shoulder and took them home. And I helped him a bit with taking of the food to the jungle, and then later on it turned out to be that he would do it by himself and only once a week. And then later on the American planes were coming in, and there's been some other commotion that started happening around, you know, the Rand's house. And I overheard my mom and dad talking about we better go to the Japanese concentration camp so that we will not be suspected of. And I didn't know what we were going to be suspected of. But, oh, incidentally, before I go on to that, I remember one time I was playing outside our Rand's house, and there was this huge water catchment. It was a concrete water catchment, very deep, very big. And I used to go down in there during dry season to clean it all out. And then my dad would hoist me down. We would clean it and then get out, and that would be to catch rainwater. And we used to give rainwater to all our neighboring farm people. So at that time, when after I cleaned it up and it was really empty, it has a really nice echo. So I used to, one day I was imitating a bird, and so I was leaning halfway in saying, tweet, tweet, tweet. And all of a sudden my mom came running out. She pushed me away and she said, come in for my kilipatok mo. You know, I said, Karen, shut up, don't ever say that. And then she hit me, and then she kicked me, and her foot landed right on my nose, and my nose started bleeding, and I was crying, and I thought my mom really hated me. And I carried that. I had lots of painful things during this war because things were not explained to me, and I didn't know. We kids felt that our parents didn't love us, but what she was doing is, we learned later after the war that many people were killed, tortured before they were killed because of Mr. George's tweet. And there I was, imitating a bird, saying tweet, tweet. And when my mom hit me, it's not because she hated me, it's because she was trying to save my life and the life of our family, because I didn't understand that until after the war when she explained it to me. But anyway, after that, we continued to do this activity of going to the jungle, bringing food to Tweet. However, when my father first saw Tweet, when Mr. Pangilinan brought him over, he said he saw this gaunt-looking person with long beard, hollow eyes, and it reminded him of Jesus Christ before he was crucified. And he remembered the learning he had in the you know, biblical saying that I am my brother's keeper. So he took him in, not because he's somebody special and because he's Mr. Tweed and he's a great American guy, but because he felt that he was his brother's keeper. And there are a lot of people who wanted to help save him because of their belief on American democracy, not because he's somebody special, a special American hero. And that's why my father kept him. And then when there were few people who were getting angry about turning himself in, my father refused to let him turn himself in. He said, if you turn yourself in, that means death to me and my wife and my kids, my father, my mother, my whole Artero family will be dead. So no way over my dead body will I let you turn yourself in. But while Tweep was hiding, he had no idea what was going on in the minds of the Tsumoro people. He had no idea that they really, you know, some of them want him to give himself up. But we felt that if he gave himself up, he's not going to survive. He will be killed. And along with him, us. And that's why, you know, and there are a lot of things that were done that were bad, but we really believe that what my father did was right, and we all stood by it. And there are a lot of people, too, that felt that way.
Why would the Japanese be so interested in getting Tweet? He's one unarmed man in the woods.
Because Tweet was the only radio man that was here on the island, and America did not tell the Navy that was here ahead of time to destroy confidential, matter, and until it was almost too late. So the remaining soldiers that were here started to destroy all those documents. However, by the time that the Japanese were bombing, and then they invaded the island on the 10th of December, by that time, Tweet was not able to dismantle and destroy the radio. So the Japanese were so interested in finding him so that he can put the radio back on, so they can spy on the U.S. military activity in the Pacific. That was the reason.
Do you want to do a tail slate, and then we'll reorganize and see what we're going to go. Tail slate.
This is 92-3 of Oral History, take 7, tail slate.
I thought we could just
sound.
Okay.
History, Ms. Casper Bauer, 92-3, take 8.
I know you wanted to know if I had any, seen any Japanese during the war. A lot of times the Japanese would pass by our house on the way to the lighthouse that they were building. And when they would come, they usually try to come during meal time, and they would just chase us off the table, and they'll just sit down and eat all the food. So when they're done, then there'll be no food for us to eat for the rest of the day. So we seen them come to our place. Usually our dog will start barking when any strangers are coming, and my mom then will hold the baby and the smaller kids near her, so she feels that the little children will protect her from being raped or molested, while the rest of us older ones are sent into the jungle to hide, and I will climb a tree and watch and wait until they're gone. Once in a while, like I said, if we're seated at the table and they'll come, then they'll chase us away and they'll eat the food, and then they'll go on their way.
What do you remember about your father coming to you and then you're having to be gathered up and then going into the jungle? Can you talk about that?
You mean before, when the bombardment started to happen?
Yes, when you knew you were going to go towards the cave.
Okay, well, my dad, when the Americans were approaching the island and bombarding the island, my dad decided to take the last provision of food up to Tweed's cave and give it to him and tell him that he can't bring him any more food. And so when he went up there, he brought back the food, and he seemed so very happy. Of course, we kids were very happy too, because now we have extra food to eat. But we didn't know what he was so happy about. So I heard him talking to Mom about going to the concentration camp. And then we were getting ready to go to the camp when Mr. Pangilinan and his family came and joined us. So we were going to get ready. And then Pop went to look for the cow to pull the book cart, and he couldn't find the cow. I don't know how she got loose. And later on, the planes were coming again. The American planes were coming and shooting. So we all ran to a nearby cave in the jungle, and then my dad told us to go get some the remaining eggs from the hen house. So my cousin and my sister and I went over to get the eggs, and on our way out, we met two Saipanese, and they start asking us if we know Mr. Pangilinan, Juan Pangilinan, and right away my cousin said, "Yes, he's right down there with us," and I got really scared and upset for divulging our secret hideout. So we didn't get the eggs. We turned around and took the two guys back, and there he told Mr. Pangilinan that the Japanese wanted him for questioning. Pay him for all the eggs and farm produce that they had given him, or rather that he had given them. But everybody started crying and kept telling him, "John, don't go, don't go." But he said, "No, I'll go. I have nothing to hide, and if it will help save my family, I'll do that." So we we all cried and he left. And then later on, we went back to the ranch to get ready to go to the concentration camp when these two Saipanese again came and told my dad the same thing. And my dad said, no, the Japanese is not going to be paying me for anything during this bombardment. Why would they come now? And ask me to come for repayment. And then I remember that there was a rifle or a shotgun in a hollow of a tree that my dad was hiding. So I ran and took it, and I went out and said, Papa, 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 here, I found a gun. So he took it and he pointed it at the two men and said, I'll kill you before I let you go. Tell me the truth. Why do you want me to go with you to the Japanese? And he said, well, when Mr. Pangilinan was tortured, and while he was unconscious, he kept saying the word Atero, Antonio, Atero. And so then he died. Of course, my dad was all shook up, you know, when he heard, they said that. And so my dad said, I'm not going to let you take us, and you go ahead and hide or go back to the Japanese if you want to, and we'll go take care of, I'll take care of my family. So dad then changed his mind and took us to Tuit's cave. But before that, when my dad took the last provision of food, I forgot to tell you that he found a note from Tuit saying that he signaled the ship out there, a destroyer or whatever, and they came to pick him up. So he was off the island. And so we went and hid in his cave. That was sometime in July, I think July 12 or some 13 or something like that. And we stayed there till August 8, my birthday. When on our way up there, my mom lost a baby because it was a very difficult cliff, jagged edge to climb, and you really have to use all your hands and your feet to climb up. And my mom was pregnant. She lost a baby, and she was hemorrhaging very badly. And while sick up there, there was some family squabble between my dad and my uncle. And then he left, and my uncle went and stayed with my grandfather and my other cousins and aunties. Then I got really angry. We kept praying and saying the rosary so that we wouldn't be bombed by the Americans. And so I threw my rosary against the cliff, and I said, I'm mad at God. I'm not going to pray anymore, because he's not listening to us. And then I went out to the outside, and I start watching the ship come in to the island on Assan area. And then the ship opened up, and all the men start coming into the land, and a lot of fire going on, shooting, I guess. Then more bombing started to happen on our area. And then all of a sudden, I heard this voice saying, no, 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 the Americans are here, the Americans are here. That was my cousin coming up, leading two American soldiers. And my father said, you're lying to me. You told the Japanese we're here. And said, no, 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 look at, there are two Americans. So as the men were coming up, my dad said to my mom, they're really Americans, they're really Americans. And as the men came into the cave, I got scared, and I took all my brothers and sisters and I made them stay in the back end of the cave. And then these two guys came up to us, and like I said, they really smell stinky, different kind of odor that it's not the same as the Japanese soldiers' odor. And I didn't want my brothers and sisters to be harmed, but they opened up a can of food, and inside were crackers and biscuit and gum, and I melted, so.
We just ran out of film.
Okay, we're doing room tone in Karen Casper Bauer's house.
Carmen.